Ed said, the grand finale will be in a little while, okay? So I'm going to do, it's one of those things, what do you do for 15 minutes? So I'm going to hopefully in the next 15 or 20 minutes do no justice, but do a speed review of the anticipation for Jesus the Messiah coming, okay? So we start with creation, okay? And creation, you had the two people. How many rules did they have? Adam and Eve. How many rules did they have? One. Which was?
Don't eat off that tree.
Yeah. They only had one, and how did they do? Not so good. Okay? So, of course, they kick him out of the garden, and you get this little prophetic phrase that the seed of the woman is going to come and it's going to crush the head of the serpent and the serpent's going to bruise its heel. So from the very, very, very beginning, you have this idea of something's coming. Something's coming. And then you have the first family. They start having sons. And how well did that work out? Okay, everybody says it's always getting worse. It never was good. Okay? The first brothers, they killed each other. Okay? And you go, oh, really? But from the very beginning, we knew we needed a deliverer. We needed a Messiah. We needed forgiveness. We needed it from the very beginning. Okay? And then you have this flood. It was like, oh, we were so bad, we needed a flood. We needed a deliverer. And it was in the form of a boat. Who would have thought? Okay? And then, you know, the tower, and they divide everybody up. And then Abraham comes along, and there's a new set of promises. It's, oh, I'm going to bring not only a deliverer, but I'm going to create this great people, this great nation, and I'm going to give you land and whoo, all these great things. But once again, how well did they understand it? They didn't really understand it very well. So they tried doing it on their own, and that didn't work out well either. Okay, and then all of a sudden you start going, you know, you get Abraham, then Isaac, then Jacob. And you start to get these little promises, these little things that come up that God's going to do something greater. Okay, and then you get Joseph, and of course they treat him very well, and they end up in Egypt, right? And then all of a sudden Exodus comes along. And oh, for 400 years, you get Moses, another idea of a deliverer. It's like, oh, and we read about him, was it last week or the week before, about the Messiah is going to be greater, that God's going to bring somebody greater. Okay, and they go into the beginning of Exodus as a family, and they come out of it a people group, okay, and eventually a nation. Okay, and they are so trusting of God, what happens? What happens in Numbers? They send in the spies, and how do? Not so good, right? The little song. 12 men went to spy, 10 were, and 2 were, okay? So, once again, it's this idea of God having to put up with us, okay? God having His plan, and we don't always understand His plan, or we don't trust His plan fully. We may a little bit. Obviously, Joseph and Caleb did, or Joshua and Caleb did, but the rest of them didn't. And you start to see God when they're in the desert and He brings them the idea of the tabernacle. Oh, it's a place to go and to worship. The presence of God is going to be there. And then the idea of the sacrifices and the law. How do you live? How do you approach a holy God? But all these things were this idea of a foreshadowing to what Jesus would truly be, what Jesus would truly fulfill. And you start to see these patterns over and over. You know, and then in Numbers, there's the grumbling and all those wonderful things. But God is still doing miracles. God is still providing. God is delivering them in battles. God's giving them food. He's giving them water. He's doing all these great things. And then Moses finally dies. Joshua comes along, okay? Joshua brings him into the land. Hallelujah, this is going to be so great. God's finally going to start fulfilling His promises, right? Yes and no. Yes, they go in, they walk around Jericho and the walls fall, and everybody goes, whoa, what's this all about? This is an amazing God and a great God. And they conquer the land, and then the judges come along, and we talked a little bit about them in this cycle. And everything can be going great, and then they say, oh, that nation over there, they have a cool God. Let's go follow their God. And God would have to discipline them. And then he'd raise up a judge. And in the middle of all this, they start whining when Samuel's come along. And it's like, oh, we want a king like everybody else. Because we can't take care of ourselves. We need a physical king like everybody else. And of course, what's God's response? I was always your king. I was always taking care of you. You know what happens if you get a king? They build kingdoms. And they take your money. They take your sons for armies. Are you sure you want to go down that road? Yep, we want to be like everybody else. Okay, then you get wonderful Saul coming along. Okay, he's a man's man. And they say, woo, this is great. Didn't turn out so well. So God raises up David. Okay, and David's somebody after his own heart. The shepherd boy, the one who took out Goliath. And you say, ooh. And then God starts another thing he keeps talking about. I'm going to raise up somebody from the line of David. Okay? So they start going, oh, awesome. This Messiah is going to be like David. Okay? They're loving life. Okay? And then you get Solomon. Solomon did some great stuff. Okay? Blessed him. Powerful. Successful. Rich. Built the temple. Everyone was awed by that. The whole world looked at the God of Israel and said, wow, look at how great Israel is. Okay? And of course, they do so well that the two sons come, Jeroboam and Rehoboam after Solomon, and what do they decide? We need to split up the kingdom because we don't like each other. Okay? You say, wow, good job, fellas. All right? Once again, great family relationship. And so you have the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes. The 10 tribes, good old Jeroboam takes them and he says, you know what? I don't want them going to worship at the temple. That's not a good way to do things. I have a great idea. I'm going to set up 2 calves and we'll go worship there. Anyone heard that story before? What happened the first time with the golden calf with Moses? How did that work? Okay, so once again, we need a deliverer as the people of Israel. And then you start going down. So 931, they have the big divide. And then you get to 722, and God says, okay, Israel, the northern tribes, you're done. Syria comes in. They basically disappear from history. And you go, wow, that is so sad. Why would this happen? And it was like, well, God had his covenants, and he's trying to work through these people. And then you get the southern tribes, okay? And they do okay. They have a couple good kings, and they'll have a couple bad kings and some good kings. But eventually, you know, Jeremiah and Lamentations, not pretty. Okay? Babylon comes in, takes them away. And then you get, in 586, and then you get the story of Daniel. And it's like, oh, he goes to Babylon. He does all that stuff. But during this whole time, God is putting these little verses in, and he's keeping his promise the whole time. And these people, the remnant, is always anticipating God showing up. God's going to deliver us. God's got a plan. God's going to do it. All this time, the faithful are always believing, just like Daniel. Okay? Daniel had zero reason to trust God at this point. Everything had gone wrong, but he still trusted. And he stood up and did great things. And then you kind of have the idea of them starting to come back with Ezra and Nehemiah, and they rebuild the temple, and they rebuild the walls. And it's like, okay, God's going to rebuild us again. God's going to bring a David, and we're going to be a great nation again. God's going to come back and do all these great things for us. And then you get to good old Malachi. And in Malachi 3, it says, behold, I send my messenger, and he will prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom you seek will suddenly come to his temple, the messenger of the covenant in whom you delight. Behold, he is coming, says the Lord of hosts. But who can endure the day of his coming? And who can stand when he appears? For he is like the refiner's fire and like the fuller's soap. He will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver, and he will purify the sons of Levi, refine them like gold and silver, and they will bring offerings in righteousness to the Lord. Then the offering of Judah and Jerusalem will be a blessing to the Lord, as in the days of old and in the former years. So as we've gone this last month or so, and you get the Isaiah talks about somebody coming, and there's this new Moses, and there's this new covenant idea, and you get this anticipation building, and then you get, you know, Malachi in the 400s, and then there's kind of this idea of the silence. And then nothing really happens, biblically anyways. Obviously there's history, and the temple's still there and all that, until you get to the time of Jesus, when he's being born. And what a great anticipation that must have been. Wow, what is this Messiah going to look like? Okay, is he going to be a David? Are we going to have exile? Are we going to be like Moses and we're going to become a great nation? Is he going to be like Solomon? Like, how is this going to play out, God? When is this going to happen? Is it going to happen in my lifetime? In the praying and the anticipation. And what about us? What kind of anticipation do we have? Do we have any? Do we trust God? Do we really believe Jesus is going to come again? Do we really believe in a heaven and hell? Do we really believe God can do miracles today? Do we really believe God has a plan? Do we really believe all that kind of stuff? Do you have an anticipation building up inside of you? Because there's at least a group of people every generation that thinks, Jesus is coming back this year. Jesus is coming back in my lifetime. You go all the way back. You know, in some of those New Testament books. Yeah, Jesus is coming back in my lifetime, right? He's just going to be gone for a couple of years, a decade or two. You know, then even they stopped building churches around the year 1000 because they thought, oh, that makes sense. Jesus would come back in the year 1000, right? Okay. Rhyme or reason, that's what they thought of. Okay, and then even in our generations, they have these great books, you know. 88 reasons Jesus would come back in 1988. And then the next year, 89 reasons he's going to come back in 89. And wasn't quite the seller, the first one was, but God has put inside of us all an anticipation that, oh, something's going to happen, something's going to come. But we have to trust, we have to believe, we have to be encouraged, we have to encourage one another that, yeah, God's still working. God's still got plans. God's still got all these great things that's going to happen. And someday he's going to come and, you know, for us, it's the second coming, not the first coming. Okay, we look backwards to the first coming. You know, but for us, it's the second coming. What's that going to look like? And do we anticipate it? What's it going to be like to have no more pain, no more tears, no more hurts? Do we anticipate it? Or do we just anticipate waking up tomorrow morning and going to work? Well, you know, what do we anticipate? So on Christmas Eve, we're going to talk about the wise men and what they were anticipating and what they did. So what we're going to do now is we're going to pray, take a little coffee break. We're going to go get the kiddos so they can rearrange everything, and the grand finale can happen, okay? All right. So Lord, I thank you.